This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The people are ready to move in solidarity. It's the leadership that is questioning whether or not it's possible for us to do the things that the Justice First Tour is seeking to do.
How does one cultivate environmental activism in the deepest of red states? Is the current situation in the White House dividing Americans further or expanding the progressive tent? This week on Sea Change Radio, we discuss these issues and more with the Reverend Leo Woodbury, a non-denominational pastor from South Carolina who's thoroughly committed to fighting climate change. Reverend Woodbury talks about his upcoming 10-state climate justice tour, the upsides and downsides of raising awareness of climate change in the South, and the overlap between the civil rights and environmental movements as we mark the 50th anniversary of the passing of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Reverend Leo Woodbury. Reverend, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you for this awesome opportunity.
Why don't you first explain what the Justice First Tour is and how you got involved in it?
Hey, the Justice First Tour actually was first conceived in Florence, South Carolina, back in December of 2000. Where we had a march and a rally. And since then, we've been having discussions across the South about how do we become more unified? How do we work in solidarity more? And so the concept of the Justice First Tour is that our movements are segmented according to issues. So we have the environmental justice movement, earth justice, climate justice, environmental justice, as I said, economic justice, gender justice, etc. And so we looked at it and we said, well, what is the one issue that binds us all together? And we said, that's putting justice first, that if we can attain justice for our constituents in any issue area, then we have won for them in those communities. And then we also did an analysis of successful movements in the past, such as the civil rights movement, the women's movement, and found that their success was based on bringing together a diverse mix of people across issue areas under one big tent. So people who were advocating for civil rights wanted civil rights so they could marry someone of a different race, so that they could follow a career path that was forbidden to them, so that they could attend integrated schools, so they could have accommodations, eat at a lunch counter, get the right to vote, run for an elected office. But it all came under the banner of civil rights. So we're looking to lift up the concept of justice first across the South and bring people together so that we can build a wall of solidarity that doesn't keep people out, but instead is inclusive and allows us to have a greater impact with our work.
Yes, if you look at some of the states where this Justice First Tour goes, it's a largely red map. And I want you to give us more details on the cities in a second, but it sounds like you're aligning with organizations that one typically wouldn't see making big inroads with the majority of the South, such as the Sierra Club. They have their Ready for 100 campaign. And also, I want you to talk a little bit about the work of the Dogwood Alliance. Maybe you can talk about how you're working with these partners to try to make inroads in what can be a pretty uphill climb in some of these communities.
Absolutely. And see, one of the things is that there's a lot of great work that's being done in the southern states, and we have to remember that while the South has more polluting facilities than any other region of the South, is one of the poorest regions in the South, and actually receives less philanthropic dollars than any other region in the country, that an immense amount of successful work comes out of the South. The concept of environmental justice started in the South. So the South is rising again because there are networks all throughout the South of organizations that are dealing with different issues. And so when we look at the Sierra Club and we look at Dogwood Alliance, which aren't traditional partners of community-based organizations working in grassroots communities, we see that there are reasons to align ourselves. So for example, when we don't take care of our forests, when we don't resist clear cutting of our forests, then what happens is that we minimize our carbon sinks, which remove carbon from our air. And carbon is one of the greatest producers or causes of climate change. And also when we have fewer trees in our forests, then we do away with our natural defense system that protects us against flooding. And so we know a lot of the communities that are flooded are communities that are rural, that are low income, and people of color communities. And then also when we look at the fact that over 75% of low income and African American people live within 30 miles of a polluting facility, as we're able to close down and dismantle fossil fuel energy generating facilities and move towards clean renewable energy, we're not only creating job opportunities and business opportunities, but we're also creating healthier communities. So that we can see the intersectionality of our work, and we're just so glad that we are able to work with these large organizations as well as smaller grassroots organizations to close those gaps.
So, Reverend, why don't you talk about this first event that begins on April 12th in Raleigh, North Carolina, if you will, and then mention some of the other cities you are hitting on this tour.
Absolutely. So, this Thursday in Raleigh, North Carolina, we will be launching the tour at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Wade Avenue in the city of Raleigh. And the kickoff will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in Raleigh. And then we'll be going from there, covering 22 cities in 10 southern states. And so right now we're looking at Arkansas, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Kentucky, Alabama, and Georgia. And so that actually only leaves two cities in the Southeast, that are Tennessee and West Virginia. And we're actually in conversation with people right now about possibly including those cities on those states on the tour.
And what can people expect if they show up to one of these events?
Well, when they show up at the event, we'll be talking about national and regional issues from the perspective of the Sierra Club, Dogwood Alliance, and New Alpha Community Development Corporation. But most of the organizing and participants will be locally based. And so we'll also have speakers and entertainment from local people. And that will allow us to build a platform locally, statewide, as well as regionally. And building a platform, as well as having a big tent that we all can work under, is absolutely positively crucial towards us moving forward.
You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. Hope someday that you'll join us and the world. No possessions. I wonder if you can.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the Reverend Leo Woodbury. So, Reverend, you're the pastor at Kingdom Living Temple, which is a non-denomination church in Florence, South Carolina, correct?
That's correct.
Maybe you can give us a little perspective on the challenges that you face trying to bring people together. You were speaking earlier about Justice First Tour being a big tent mission. As we remember Dr. Martin Luther King, who was shot and killed 50 years ago this week, it seems like Dr. King's dream of bringing people together has been put on hold for the time being with the Trump administration. And I'm thinking most specifically, in your case, with people of faith. We often thought of the evangelical movement as kind of one of the more important, strongest voting blocks in the country. They still are, but they seem to have abandoned their principles in general and have decided to go with this vulgarian, for lack of a better word, in Donald Trump. They cast aside all of his personal sins and the fact that he's obviously a deeply flawed individual, to say the least, and decided to just get behind him. He has very strong backing from the evangelical community. On the flip side, you have religious movements on the left and communities that you're leading in the South that have important voices, but they're so divided. So maybe you can speak to how you're hoping to use the environment to bring people together. On the face of it, it seems like we all want clean air and clean water, but then the devil's in the details, isn't it?
Yes, and there's actually starting to be conversation with the evangelical church, based primarily, as with other faith traditions, on our spiritual and our scriptural beliefs. And so there's actually conversation that's beginning. Because from a faith perspective, every major religion has a creation story. And with that creation story, Adam, or whoever the first man and or woman is asked to be a steward over the garden of the earth, to be fruitful and to multiply and replenish. This faith tradition actually puts forth the first recycling program when it talks about replenishing the earth. And so when we look, what we see is that on a high level with the faith community, we've already had people buy in. So in September 2014, while the People's Climate March was going on in New York City, I attended the World Council of Churches gathering, where you had Buddhists, Hindu, Jews, Christians, I mean, probably about 15 different faith traditions signed a statement of faith that said climate change is real. That was followed the next year by the encyclical by Pope Francis. And since then, we've had statements of faith from international Muslim and national Muslim organizations, Hebrew, Buddhist, the African and Methodist Episcopal Church at their quadrennial meeting has just adopted climate change and environmental justice as one of their international initiatives. And so we see that moving. We're going to be at Union Presbyterian College's seminary. We're going to be at Virginia Union University Seminary. So what we're seeing is that the faith community is starting to become engaged and involved. And people of faith always have been. So, you know, when I got involved with this roughly 27 years ago, and our faith institutions were not aware or educated about these issues facing us, you'll find that a lot of frontline and grassroots organizations that have been doing this work for decades are actually led by people of faith. And so actually what's happening now is we're starting to see the faith community becoming more involved, even on a national level. When you look at Green the Church, which is an African-American initiative led by Reverend Ambrose Campbell out in Oakland, California, or you're looking at Green Faith, or you're looking at Interfaith Power and Light. So we're starting to move and mobilize the faith community. And if we can do that, including the evangelical church, we will have hundreds of millions of people who will be advocating for change and for dealing with the impacts of climate change and moving towards a clean, renewable future. And so I'm really hopeful because I can see movement, and I believe that we'll be able to make progress with some of our evangelical brothers and sisters when they realize that this is a moral call. This is a spiritual imperative for them as people of faith, and that they are called to care for the least among us, who are those who are most impacted by climate change and pollution, and they are called to be good stewards of the earth.
So you were instrumental in preventing a coal plant from being built in your community, correct?
Yes, Santee Cooper wanted to build a coal-fired plant to generate electricity in Florence County a few years back, and we were able to, pretty much along the lines of the Justice First Tour, we were able to organize and mobilize people across different issue areas and class, as well as race and religion, and were able to eventually have them withdraw from building that plant in Florence County.
As you go forward with the Justice First Tour, as you encounter people in communities that still have a lot of fossil fuel jobs, let's say if you go into West Virginia and work in coal country, what do you find is the best way to open in dialogue with people who are saying, don't take our jobs, we want to keep these coal jobs, regardless of what it might mean in the long term for our planet?
Well, you know, we would say to them, first of all, that despite the narrative that's coming out of the federal government, which is like a lot of narratives that come out of the federal government today, not based in reality nor facts, that when you look at what is happening in the energy industry, that right now solar and wind are creating more jobs and have more jobs currently than the coal and oil industry combined. And then also we want people to remember that while those were jobs that paid well and provided for families, we want them to remember the sacrifices that they caused. We want them to remember those dear ones that they laid to rest because of black lung and all these other illnesses that they got working in fossil fuel industries, and that they can have jobs in the clean energy industry without jeopardizing the lives of their loved ones. And that it's high time that we moved away from energy generation that is based on death and illness, that a industry that is literally based on a product that comes from dead dinosaurs and turned in the ground, that is based on an energy industry that is based on coal that is interned in the ground like a grave, and instead that we move towards life-giving energy like the sun that gives life to everything on this planet, and the wind that spreads the seeds that we need for flora, fauna, and the food that we consume daily. And so the real and true narrative is that there are more jobs in the renewable energy industry today than there are in the fossil fuel industry. Those jobs are declining, and we want people to make a living, yes, by the sweat of their brow, but not at the cost of their health and lives.
Let it rain, let it rain. We got to all pretend, do our thing. Make a better world to live, yeah, 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 yeah. Sing, sing, sing. Sing, yeah, yeah. We got to all pretend, we got to do our thing. Got to make a better world to live, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know we got to all pretend. Do our thing, make a better world live, live.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the Reverend Leo Woodbury. He's the pastor of Kingdom Living Temple, a non-denomination church in Florence, South Carolina. So, Reverend, we had the director and a participant from a film that was on PBS last month. I don't know if you saw it. It was called American Creed. It starred people such as David M. Kennedy and Condoleezza Rice, as well as one of the people we had on the show to discuss the film was Joan Blades, who's the founder of one of the co-founders of MoveOn.org and now works on a project called Living Room Conversations, where they try to get people from ideologically polarized sectors of the economy and politics to have meaningful discussions and try to mend these fences. But as somebody who works in the Deep South with communities of color for years, I'm interested in your opinion, because after we ran this piece, I've had a lot of people come up to me and we've kind of had a deeper discussion about the film, American Creed. Some people think this is the best way to go. We need to all just talk and have a bigger tent, while others think that polarization is not a problem we're going to be able to fix. And it's more important to appeal to the 30 to 40% of people in a presidential election who don't get to the polls and really make sure that we have full participation from all our citizenry in order to get the policies that represent more vulnerable populations. I'd like to know your opinion on this. What do you think is the best tact?
I think that in the long term, as well as in the immediate, that the best approach is always to bring people together. And that a short-term view just looks at a few years. But if you look at what we were able to do with the Equal Rights Amendment and the women's movement, when you look at what we were able to do with the civil rights movement and student movements and other movements across America, we were able to bring together people who were deeply polarized, deeply and violently also oftentimes opposed to one another. And so you look at what happened in 1965 and 1968, and then all you have to do is go forward 20 years. And from 1965 to 1985, America had been completely and totally changed. Not saying that we had resolved all of our racial issues, but how our country looked was markedly changed. And so I'm a firm believer that we can do the same thing in 10 or 20 years, but we can only do that by having all the stakeholders at the table. We need to make it profitable and make it feasible for utilities and co-ops who are already, despite the narrative coming out of Washington, D.C., building solar farms, building wind farms, because they don't want to lose their share of the energy market. You know, the crucial piece about this is meeting people where they are. And I talk about this a lot of times when we talk about organizing. You don't meet people where you are, you meet people where they are. And so if the motivation for some people is how do I get a job? Well, renewables can answer that. If where they are is how do I lower my energy bill, then renewables can be an answer to that. If they want to know how do I avoid the disastrous impacts of climate change, how do I minimize that after having been the victim of a flood, then dealing with forest issues deal with that. When they say, how can my voice be heard? And we're talking about environmental justice rights, then what we're proposing about having an environmental bill of rights, people looking at that and seeing if we can have voter referendums to have that attached to state constitutions, that's how we do that. But it takes everyone at the table to make permanent and large scale change. And so I can understand folks wondering about how, you know, we respond in the immediate in terms of, you know, voting in 2018, 2020, and we're looking at those issues. But long term, we need to be as inclusive as we possibly can, because people need to realize this. Donald Trump is not the problem. He's the tip of the iceberg. And the people who are financing him, the people who are supporting him by voting, the people who are supporting him in the media are still going to be there unless we can change the hearts and minds of people so that they no longer see those sorts of policies as viable and productive for America and the world's future.
Do you think it's fair to draw the parallel between the Vietnam War, which activated people who weren't politically active in the American consciousness? It was kind of a shot across the bow, which led to a bigger tent, which helped the women's movement and civil rights movement evolve into what it became within a decade. Do you think it's fair to say that something so divisive like the Vietnam War actually brought people together, and we could maybe look at the election of President Trump in a similar light?
Absolutely. He wanted to unify the country, and he has unified the country. There have literally been millions of people marching across America in roughly the last 14 months. And so people look at that awesome phenomena, which we could not have envisioned 2 years ago. And rather than looking at a dismal future, that actually encourages people. And your reference to the Vietnam War, the Stop the War movement, is definitely a good model of what we're working towards in the South with the Justice First Tour, because the people involved with the Stop the War movement, the Vietnam War, people were there because they were communists, because they were progressive, because they were pacifists, because they could not support the war from a spiritual perspective. You had people like Muhammad Ali, who for racial reasons said they did not believe that a black man should fight a yellow man for the white man. You had students who were protesting against the draft. So you had a whole range of people, once again, across issue areas, different races, et cetera. And what I really believe is that the people in this country are ready for that. And the question should be whether or not the leadership of various movements are ready for that, because we just saw what the young people did, the amazing work that they did in terms of stopping gun violence, and how they turned out all over the country and all over the world without any thought about partisan division or issue division or any of those things. And we saw the same thing with the Women's March, et cetera. So the people are ready to move in solidarity. It's the leadership that is questioning whether or not it's possible for us to do the things that the Justice First Tour is seeking to do.
Well, it's important work that you and your colleagues are doing. The Justice First Tour, we will link to it on Sea Change Radio. Reverend Leo Woodbury, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for the amazing opportunity, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Terrence Blanchard, Keb Moe, and James Booker. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.